Look, I'm not an ecstatic person, but I'm about as excited as you can be, I guess, for me in the middle of the season on an 8-game losing streak.
You are Locked On Fantasy Basketball, your daily podcast on fantasy basketball. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Fantasy Basketball podcast brought to you by Basketball Monster. And today's Locked On Fantasy Basketball podcast is also brought to you by Draft.com. Use the promo code LOFANTASY to get a free entry into a draft with your first deposit. My name is Josh Lloyd and I am the lead fantasy basketball analyst at BasketballMonster.com, and you can find me on Twitter as always at RedRock_Beeble. Go ahead and follow Basketball Monster at BaskMonster and the Locked On Podcast Network at LockedOnNBAnet, where you can hear the breakdowns of all the big injury news from today on Locked On Wizards with Ben Standig and Locked On Cavs with Chris Manning. They'll have all the information from the two big injuries that we heard about today, which I will, of course, get into in today's program as well. We're going to look at all 9 games from Tuesday. We're going to preview the 8 games we've got for Wednesday. So a lot to talk about. There's also going to be a player spotlight on...
Nice, Gary!
So...
Let's get to it.
All right, Michael Bolton, we will do that. The monstrous line of the night, no guessing here. It's pretty straightforward. Jim Harden had a 60-point triple-double. 60 points, 10 rebounds, 11 assists, 5 triples, 4 steals, a block, 19 of 30 from the field, and 17 of 18 from the line. One of the best performances you will ever see in fantasy basketball. I talk about Z-score numbers a lot. His, I think, was the largest Z-score of the entire season. It was a 5.2, which is just incredulously large because of that massive free throw percentage, the huge field goal percentage on volume. Yeah, 60 points, the triple-double, the 4 steals, the 5. It was just an out-of-control fantasy line. And if you care about turnovers, he only had 5, which is still a lot, but that's like right on his season average. We're not talking about a game where he went, you know, bananas and had like 8 turnovers. Is there anything like that for a guy that handled the ball as much as he did and had a 44% usage? You're pretty bloody happy with that sort of performance from Jim Harden. You're happy with it in DFS, you're happy with it in roto leagues, you're happy with it in points leagues, you're happy with it in head-to-head leagues. It's just brilliant. He is the number one player again this season. He was the number one player last year. He's the number one player again. Somehow has gotten better, which is unbelievable. Well, better in scoring anyway, 2.5 points extra over 4 threes. His rebounding has dropped, his assists have dropped, but he's upped his defense, his steals and blocks have gone up, his efficiency has gone up, his free throw percentage, his field goal percentage, his 3-point percentage, all of that has risen. Just another absolutely spectacular season from Jim Harden. I'm going to tell you now about today's sponsor, and that is the good people over at Draft.com. Did you know that your chances of winning on Draft are 80% better than on salary cap sites? That's why Draft is my new favorite fantasy site. No more getting crushed by the pros. It's just me and more than 1 million people have already downloaded Draft as well. You can play in a real live NBA draft right now and be done in under 5 minutes and get paid out the next day. Drafts are filling every second, so you can join one whenever you want. All new players get a free entry into a real money draft when you make your first deposit, but you have to use my promo code, which is LOFANTASY. That's right. Play in a real money draft for free just by using my promo code LOFANTASY, but it gets even better. Draft is so sure that you'll love it that they're even offering Locked On Fantasy Basketball listeners a money-back guarantee of up to $100. Just search Draft in your app store and go to draft.com. Come and play for free right now with that promo code LOFANTASY. Join in on Locked On Draft Wednesday with all the other hosts of the Locked On Podcast Network. You can go and join Locked On specific leagues over on Draft as well. It's DFS, but in seasonal snake draft format. I'm sure you'll enjoy it. Go and try it out. Try it out for free, and I'm pretty sure that you'll be back for more after that. All right, let's now look at the waiver wire line of the night, and it goes to Anthony Tolliver of the Detroit Pistons. Tolliver started with Blake Griffin not yet ready to play. 20 points, 4 rebounds, 4 assists, 3 triples, 2 steals and a block. Great percentages, 6 of 9 from the field, and all 5 of his free throws went down. Tone Tolliver in the last 2 weeks is actually the 107th ranked player, getting 26 minutes per night. I've mentioned his name quite a lot as an elite three-point streamer over the last month. He's averaging 2 threes a game and 9 points. Doesn't do huge amounts else, but in that time, he's shooting 51% from the field, so really helping in that area too. But as I detailed on yesterday's program, with Blake Griffin arriving, his value is going to decrease. The Pistons were able to push Tobias Harris to the three at times in certain matchups and give Tolliver more minutes. With Griffin, you're not going to have that flexibility. So you're going to be getting Griffin getting his 34 night, and Tolliver's going to be stuck playing behind him and maybe getting some backup center minutes also. But he's not going to have that ability to slide into a starting role and play 28 minutes as they move Harris down, and then you limit guys like Stan Johnson or Reggie Bullock. That sort of flexibility is not around. So his value is going to dip in that sense. He's still going to be a fairly solid 3-point streaming option, but just not to the level that he was when Tobias Harris was manning that power forward position. The young gun of the night, it's the Don. Donovan Mitchell, 23-4, 2 triples, 4 steals, 8 of 17 from the field, and he hit both of his free throws. He's been a little bit off his game recently, outside the top 50 over the last 2 weeks, but still, averaging 21 points in that time, 2 triples, 3.5 rebounds and 4 assists with 1.7 steals. So it hasn't been too bad for him. The efficiency's dipped somewhat in the last couple of games, some poor shooting nights, but otherwise he has been excellent this season. We know that he's the 47th ranked player this year, second best rookie behind, third best behind Ben Simmons and Lonzo Ball. Actually, I'll have to check where he is with Lonzo. That'd be pretty close these days in the rookie rankings. Let's double check that. I should have had that prepped up earlier. No, he's ahead of Lonzo, actually. So the second best rookie behind Ben Simmons in the overall rookie ranks for the year. Really a huge surprise that he's been able to get this much of a role, be this efficient, and score as well as he has, and maintain like just an astronomical usage of 29% as a rookie shooting guard. The sky's the limit for Mitchell. I think he can be, at some point, he's got a chance to crack the top 10. It won't be for a few years, but he does have that ability. Not saying he'll get there for sure, but he's got that sort of upside, which is marvelous for a guy that was picked at pick 13 in the draft. I tell a man's not hot. Andrew Wiggins. Yeah, 15 points and 8 rebounds is nice. That's fine. But 2 assists, 1 triple, 0 steals and 0 blocks, and 7 of 22 from the field. It gives you the dud of the night. Now, of course, the dud of the night's not the worst player of the day. It's the worst player who's owned in over 70% of leagues who didn't have to leave early with injury. Otherwise, you would have had Eric Gordon and Kevin Love in there. It is an absolute disgrace of coaching, of self-awareness, that Wiggins takes 22 shots, hits 7 of them, and Karl Anthony Towns takes 7 shots. That is disgraceful on Wiggins' behalf. It's disgraceful on Tom Thibodeau's behalf. And when that happens, you absolutely 100% deserve to lose. Wiggins is, I don't even know if he's overrated. I know some people overrate him because I've gotten into arguments about it. But he just is not a positive player. It's a weird thing. He's not a good fantasy player, although over the last month, he snuck inside the top 100, averaging 19, 4.5, and 2. And that's mainly because his efficiency had risen, but he's been a negative free throw guy this year, almost in auto punt territory. He's a negative field goal percentage guy. He gets you under 2 assists per game. He can't get to 5 rebounds a game for a guy who's with his athletic gifts. And he's seen his points per game drop by over 5 per game this season, which has dipped his value from a guy who was around that 80 to 90 zone to being outside the top 130 this season. And that's, I guess, some of that's in large part due to the free throw percentage dip that he has suffered, as well as that point scoring dip. So it doesn't help him that his usage has dropped and his efficiency has dropped all in the same season. But we're 50 games through the season. I'm not expecting it to change. Like, there's nothing that's indicating that his free throw percentage is bouncing back to a 76% shooter this year. It just appears that something has gotten in his head, and that's the way it's going to stick for this year. I don't know why it happens to players. We've seen it many times. Oladipo and Pau Gasol had 10% dips in their free throws last year. We're seeing it with Westbrook and Wiggins this season. you know, huge, huge dips on significant volume. And it's weird because you can't predict that that's going to happen. And it just happens randomly for certain players. And that's sort of what's going on for Wiggins. I don't ever think he's going to be a top 40 fantasy guy. Maybe he's never even a top 50 or top 60 guy. And his contract is going to be a really interesting one to see how that ages, because this is his fourth season. He should be taking steps forward, and instead he is taking steps backwards, which is never the direction that you want to go as a player who's going to be paid max money over the next 5 years. Time to answer today's question of the day. It comes from Emily Isaac, who's on Twitter at Emily Isaac, and that's Isaac I-Z, or Z as we would call it, double A-K. She says, if you had to break it down in layman's terms, what makes a bad coach, aka Jeff Hornacek? Now, I know, Emily, you're saying that because you're a Knicks fan and Hornacek is frustrating to you. There are many things that go into being a poor coach. I'm not going to go into talking about things like X's and O's, because I will happily and readily admit that I don't know, you know, play calling or things like that as much as these coaches. I've got no idea, and they are clearly on a better level. And for me, being able to distinguish who's a better play caller and who isn't, although some of the stuff that Mike Malone's been running out late game has been a little bit questionable, I'm not going to be able to get into big decisions about that. But when I look at what a bad coach is, it's not understanding how to use the personnel that you are given. It's not understanding what your place is. And some of that is front office related. The lack of synergy between head coaches and front offices is astounding to me. Or even if there is attempts at synergy, head coaches blowing off suggestions from front offices is baffling. Jason Kidd is someone who would come to mind there. And they, well, coaches who'd been given instructions, do this, and then them not doing it is craziness to me. It is just craziness. I am sure that Steve Mills and the front office of the Knicks aren't saying to Jeff Hornacek, can you please limit Frank Ntilikina as much as possible so we can get, you know, Jarrett Jack and Trey Burke really, really in there and getting their minutes up. I'm sure that's not the case. Hornacek makes weird lineup decisions. The lineups with Ntilikina and Porzingis together have been good, but he barely uses them, and then he trots out trite excuses saying that those lineups don't work together when all the evidence that is available points to the exact opposite. The things that I look at when I look at a bad coach is tactical mistakes, like, I'm going to go back to Kidd a lot, but like, you know, if the fouling up four or missing free throws or fouling up three or, you know, missing free throws up four, whichever way it was, I don't remember, that sort of stuff. Inconsistent rotations, jerking guys around for execution mistakes rather than decision-making mistakes, which are things that, you know, I can live with. If you choose the right thing and it doesn't come off, that's totally fine. But coaches, you know, ruining guys' confidence with poor decisions, poor lineup management, are things that, you know, really can cause problems. The other thing I think is coaching is poor interpersonal skills, and creating divides in locker rooms, which again, Kidd did. Mark Jackson was big on that as well. That's absolutely terrible as a head coach, and that is what leads you to be labeled a bad coach. And that is, there are two things that were really, really common with Jackson and with Kidd. Just having no common sense about of logic, or no logic in there, not recognizing the strengths and weaknesses of your players at certain times and where they should be playing, when they should be playing, who they should be playing with. They're the things that I look at when I say this coach is not a good coach. Because they could be out there running the best drills or drawing up the best play, but when you don't have the general common sense to understand basic arithmetic or to understand where the future of your team lies and how that's going to happen. And again, that comes down to having some front office synergy, saying, well, look, guys, we might struggle a bit this year as we work our young guys in. Let's plan this for 2 years in advance. And if any front offices aren't having that discussion or realistic discussion with the coaches, and the coach feels like he's on a hot seat all the time, then that's piss poor management on their behalf as well. They should be saying, they should be working together. We want to build the next great Knicks team, whatever team it is, Kings team, and we're going to do that for 2 years' time. So let's see what these combinations can do. Let's see what these players can do in the right circumstance rather than 35-year-old journeymen who were unwanted in the NBA last year. Let's bring them in and play them 30 minutes a night just so you can scrounge out a January win against Sacramento on the road. Like, that sort of shit is bullshit, and it doesn't actually benefit the team or the coach in general getting one. But again, some of it is just atmosphere. It's, you know, you're judged on your win-loss record, which in so many cases is bullshit, because as I say a lot of the time, you know, process to me, the process about doing things is more important in the end rather than the results. I know everyone's judged on results, but sometimes you can get arsy and luck into victories and makes you seem like you know what you're doing. Shout out to Byron Scott in New Jersey. But if your process, it's not, if your process is wrong, if your decision making is wrong, then that sort of stuff isn't sustainable and luck will eventually bite you in the ass. Again, Jason Kidd with his one season of having a high ranked defense and then not realizing that it was getting torched every other season after that and not making any adjustments. That is what I think doesn't make a good coach. And part of Hornacek's issues have been your rotational decisions. We saw that. So look, and this year has been much better with his center rotations. He's moved on to point guards. But last year, just maddeningly changing the rotation on a nightly basis and everyone not knowing what their role was, and that caused significant problems with that team. So that's my criteria. When I look at these guys, all that sort of stuff goes into it, not criticizing necessarily the ins and outs of X and O's, but more the man management, lineup deployment, rotations, way they handle the media, the way they talk about their players in the media as well, I think it goes a long way to working that sort of stuff out. Let's go on to these games now and break down the action from whatever day it was, from Tuesday. That's the day. The first one of these games we're going to look at is the Oklahoma City Thunder and the Washington Wizards. Big win for the Wizards here, especially after losing John Wall for what could be the next 2 months, looking like 6 to 8 weeks for Johnny. We'll talk about that in a sec. Let's talk about the Thunder. Russell Westbrook was shut down by Tomas Satoransky. Weird sentence to say. He was 5 of 18 from the field for 13, 6, and 10 with 4 steals. He hit both his free throws, so that's a positive. But he was hounded relentlessly by Satoransky, and it wasn't a great game from Westbrook. Paulie George had 28 and 6, but no other numbers there, while Steve-O Adams had 16 and 12, and Mallow had 19, 6 and 3 with 3 blocks. And as usual, just nothing coming from anybody else on this team. Terry Ferguson started, dropped to 0. Alex Abrines had 13 minutes. Josh Huestis played 21. There is just no fantasy value with really anybody unless you're playing in a 20-team league outside of those four main guys. On to the Wizards. No Wall, as I said, for the next 2 weeks. Satoransky is going to be the starter. He is the better player out of him and Tim Frazier. And he didn't shoot well. He missed all four of his free throws, but had hit all four free throws. Had 4 points, 5 rebounds, 6 assists, 2 steals, and a block. Can contribute in multiple categories. Now, I wouldn't classify him as a must-own 10-team league guy, but for the next 2 months, he is going to probably play 26 to 27 a night, most nights, and be a useful 12-team type contributor. As for Frazier, he can have the occasional big game. We saw it in the last one. I don't think he's very good, and I think that the majority of the time he'll be held under 20 minutes a game and be an assists desperation streamer. The guy who does really benefit a lot is Markieff Morris, who played 37 minutes and had 18, 6, and 4 with 2 blocks. That's obviously a big line from him. That's 3 consecutive strong games for Morris. He'll absorb more usage, and he should get a little bit more playing time now also. While Bradles-Beal had 21, 6, and 9 with 2 steals, and it was good to see Otto Porter have a good game without John Wall. He struggled earlier on when Wall was out, but 25 and 6 with 2 steals and a block. The 62% shooting is unrealistic to expect. Going to the line 8 times is also unrealistic, but it was good to see him put together a decent game. While Kelly Oubre, only the 22 minutes, I thought he might have an opportunity to play a little bit better with Johnny out. Didn't come to fruition here. So if you were holding him in a 12-team league and there's someone else out there that's been made available, maybe one of the Detroit guys, I would make that switch pretty comfortably. The next game we take a look at, the Brooklyn Nets and the New York Knicks. Change in the Brooklyn rotation. Jarrett Allen started over Tyler Zeller, who was completely out of the rotation. Allen only played 20 minutes, had 12 and 4, and looked pretty good. I don't understand why the limited minutes, especially when 22 of your minutes went to James Webb. I don't really understand the necessity of doing that. Allen is a guy that in a 14-team league I would grab. Probably wouldn't be overly interested in 12s. I can understand doing it, because we know he's got this high block, decent scoring, high efficiency potential, which is great for fantasy. But if he's going to be stuck or mired in the 22-minute zone, it's going to be hard. Jahlil Okafor actually played more than him, which is something I can never get behind. He played 25 minutes with Rondae Hollis-Jefferson out. That's two big games with Rondae out in a row for Okafor. Only 5 points, but 13 rebounds, a steal, and a block. I'm not looking to add him in 12-team leagues. In a 16-team, sure. But when Rondae comes back, I think Jahlil goes back to being a 9 or 10-minute guy. He is a disgusting negative 18 in his on-off numbers. So he is not playing well. He can occasionally bludgeon the scoreboard and put up some numbers, but he is not playing well in this time. And I'd rather they give those minutes to Jarrett Allen. With LeVert and Hollis-Jefferson out, Stauskas played 25. He had 12 points in that time. D'Angelo Russell probably won't play on Wednesday, would be my guess. So Stauskas could get some more run there, and that would make him an interesting streamer, but that's really about it. While Russell had 7 and 5 in 20 minutes, a steal and a block, he has just shot the ball absolutely terribly since he returned. But his minutes are on the way up, and as his minutes are coming up, Spencer Dinwiddie's are coming down. Just the 25 here for Dinwiddie, 11, 3, and 7. I'm not dropping him, but I'm definitely watching it, and it's trending pretty comfortably in the wrong direction for Spencer at this point. Damari Carroll had a strong game as well, but they got their pants pulled down, the Nets. On to the Knicks, Enes Kanter. Big men against the Nets, man. It barely ever fails. 20 and 20, 5 assists and 2 blocks for Kanter, while Porzingis had 28 and 5 with 6 triples and 2 blocks. Big games from both of those guys. It was a comfortable victory. I cannot work out the Knicks point guard rotation. Frank Ntilikina played 8 minutes in the last game so that Trey Burke and Jarrett Jack could play, but he played 26 in this one. Now, in some part, I have to think that Ntilikina getting the extra minutes is because rugged Ronnie Baker lasted only 38 seconds before dislocating his shoulder, and they were able to run more 2-point guard lineups there. Trey Burke played 17 minutes and Jarrett Jack played 20. So clearly, Ntilikina played some at the shooting guard spot. He had 8 points with 5 assists, and I'm not running to grab him in any league that I didn't already own him in. Mick Beasley had 12 and 13 in 23 minutes. That's fine, but again, more of a deeper league sort of a guy, while Timmy Hardaway only played 25 but had 15 points, a decently strong performance from him. Let's go to the next game, the Minnesota Timberwolves and the Toronto Raptors. As I said, Towns only 7 shots, just horrendous, horrendous on-court and coaching display. 11 and 10 with 3 assists in 29 minutes for Townsie. We had Gorgui Dieng take the same amount of shots. We had Jeff Teague take more, Taj Gibson take more, Jim Butler take more, Andrew Wiggins take more, and Jamal Crawford take just one less. The fact that Towns can't get more shots than Teague and Wiggins, and Taj Gibson especially, is just piss poor management. It's a real problem. Now, it's a continuing problem, and it needs to change. I don't know how much of the blame Towns can take, how much goes to Teague, how much goes to Wiggins, but it needs to change. The fact that Teague is still taking shots when he shouldn't be is frustrating. He was much better in this game than the last game, but it's still an infuriating situation. He only played the 31 here, Teague, which is down from what he normally does, while Tyus played 17. That's an interesting little move in the minutes, but it's nothing that's really shaking up fantasy leagues anywhere. Butler had 25, 5, and 6, and Shabazz Muhammad played over Marcus George's Hunt. The Raptors, my boy, Jonas Valanciunas, he's a beast. 29 minutes, 18 and 11. I really, really like this guy. I just don't know how the minutes are going to go for him at any point. They've been up recently. We're seeing Dwayne Casey start to rely on him a little bit more, and that's great for his fantasy value, but he could comfortably play only 18 in the next one. He is going to be jerked around in that spot, and he has been in his entire career under Casey. He could have been a much different guy, I think, under a different coach. Now, Casey, he had some credit for changing some of the stuff that he's done, but I still hate the way that he's managed Valanciunas over the years. DeRozan had 23, 4, and 8. Lowry had 15, 3, and 9, while Ibaka played 34 minutes and had 15 and 6, a strong night from him. There was no CJ Miles, he was out, and the Jedi, OG Anunoby.
Hello there.
He got into some early foul troubles that limited him to 16 minutes, and that meant we saw 20 minutes of Norm Powell, who had 8 points in that time frame. Very, very much nothing to see there. Fred VanVleet, shockingly, couldn't repeat what he did in the last game. Still had 10 points in 21 minutes, while DeLon Wright, his shooting is way off. He's shooting like under 35% over the last 2 weeks, had only 2 points in 17 minutes. And I'd like what he did in the other categories, assists and steals and blocks in general. But again, consider him expendable in standard league formats. The next game, we take a look at the Sacramento Kings and the New Orleans Pelicans. The Kings, This is the same Kings. We are resting 2 to 3 veterans every game. They rested exactly 0 veterans in this game. And there is, I guess, a reason for it, because Willie Cauley-Stein was out, Scalabissiere was out, Malachi Richardson was out, and Frank Mason was out, all injured. But there's no reason to give 37 minutes to Costa Kufos, 32 minutes to Zach Randolph, or Yordjas Papiamis plays only 11. Now, I know Papiamis isn't very good, but if you're going to go through this whole charade of developing young guys, then don't run 58-year-old Costa Kufos into the ground. Now, Kufos was great, 17-17. Randolph was great, 26-12. But the confusing mixed messages that come out from this team all the time are confusing. Yeah, De'Aaron Fox played 27 minutes. George Hill played 28. Justin Jackson, one of their actual young players, played 18 minutes. Bogdan Bogdanovic played 18 minutes. Budrick Hield played 22 minutes. So if you're all about developing the youth, then don't make your youngest players the guys who get the fewest minutes in one of these games. And don't give us this resting bullshit of 2 guys every game if you're not going to do it. I know, I understand injuries were a part of that, but you could still have not played 15 minutes for Vince Carter and given those 15 minutes to Justin Jackson and Bogdan Bogdanovic and Buddy Hield. Very easy. You know, I don't need 32 minutes of Garrett Temple, who had 15, 2, and 6. There is absolutely zero pattern to anything this team does. There is zero predictability with anything this team does. Cauley-Stein, Bogdanovic, and Fox are still guys to own. Your Hield and Labissiere are your borderline 12-team league guys, and everything else is completely up in the air. For the Pelicans, who were rumored to be pulling off a trade this morning, I woke up and went, oh shit, Mirotić getting traded, wow, for Omer Asik and a first-round pick, which, to be honest, is a massive, would have been a massive steal for the Pelicans to get out of Asik's contract, which goes for 2 more seasons after this one. And yes, his final season is only $3 million guaranteed. But to get out of a contract like that, normally you have to give up a first-round pick. So to get out of that contract by only giving up a first-round pick and then getting back a player who is useful in Nikola Mirotić, it would have been a real bargain. But that deal appears to be dead at the moment, further backing up my claim, which again was proven wrong yesterday, that most deals, when you hear intimate details of them, are often things that have fallen apart, and that seems to be the case. It could be revived, but now other teams are getting back in on the Mirotić bandwagon, with Utah apparently coming in with another offer to get Nick. Mirotić would have killed in New Orleans. It would have been brilliant for him. 30 minutes in that role, starting next to Anthony Davis, would have absolutely killed. Rajon Rondo, officially terrible. 18 minutes, 2, 2, and 3 with 2 steals. I thought that without Boog, he'd see his minutes rise. In fact, that hasn't been the case. So if you added him on that hunch, get rid of him. He's shit. He's not getting 28 a night. Nothing's changing. He is done. Ian Clark played 30 minutes. Jameer Nelson played 19. Clarkie had 20 and 6. But this happens so often in Ian Clark's career that he has these big nights. Oh, what? How did he shoot? Oh, 90%. He has these weird games where he never misses shots, and then the other games he doesn't do anything. Just, I reckon the most common guy to have plus 90% shooting nights, I reckon he's had 3 or 4 of them in the last 2 seasons, which is ridiculous for a point guard, really. Don't get too wrapped up there. Etwan Moore struggled, 8-4 in 29 minutes. I know many fantasy people, Matt Smith included, is big on him as being a must-own 12-team league guy. I'm not quite there as much with Moore. I think he relies upon high efficiency to get you points and threes and maybe some steals. Absolutely fine to own, but to me, he's in the Reggie Bullock, Stan Johnson category, Luke Kennard, rather than an absolute lock must-own guy. But if I had Rondo, I would no problem swap him for an Etwan Moore. Omer Asik played 24 minutes, because of course he did, because Dante Cunningham was dealing with back issues, and we actually got some Cheick Diallo, just 6 minutes. It just, Elvin Gentry hates him. It's not going to happen for Diallo. We're going to see more of this Asik bullshit if Cunningham happens to miss time. That's the way it appeals. Anyway, Tone Davis, 23, 13, and 5 with 6 blocks, was a monster, and Drew had 21 with 6 assists as well. Big games from both of those blokes. The Magic, no Az Gordon, of course. So Mario Hezonja started, got himself into early foul trouble, 25 minutes, 17, 3, and 2 with 3 triples, but still a really strong game from Hezonja. And if Gordo has to miss any more time with this hip flexor issue, then Hezonja will have short-term value. We also saw Mo Spates pick it up, 17 and 5 with 4 triples, a steal, and a block. Extra minutes with Bismack Biyombo only playing 21, and for some reason, Kem Birch only playing 5. Wouldn't read too much into that from Spatesy. Biombo, that's two games in a row under 25 minutes. Not that good, as I've said all the time. Absolutely fine to own him, though, until Vuč comes back. But once Vucevic returns, he's going to have no value at all. While Fournier had 12 in 27 minutes, and Lord Alfred Payton was benched in this one. 4-1-2, they went with the hot hand of Shelvin Mack and DJ Augustin, who played 25 and 28 minutes, respectively. Frank Vogel does this occasionally. It doesn't mean that it's necessarily going to stick, and I'm not dropping Payton and I'm not adding Mack or Augustin based off this performance. For the Rockets, I said they lost Eric Gordon early. He only played 10 minutes. He had a 10 trillion. He didn't play after that with that back issue. Chris Paul was out. Trevor Ariza was out. Harden played 46 minutes. We also had huge minutes from Gerald Green, who had 11 and 6 with two triples. His viability is back now. He can be streamed in. Ryan Anderson had 10 points in 33. Clint Capella, 12 and 13. And Marmute played 39. It wasn't as successful as what he had been. He's more of a 14-team league guy after having just 8 points here. And PJ Tucker had 9, which included 3 triples in 36 minutes. The Cleveland Cavaliers and the Detroit Pistons. Kevin Love he broke his hand, and Brian Windhorst reported that he'll be out 6 to 8 weeks. Normally it's a 4 to 6 week situation with broken hands, so 6 to 8 can be considered reasonable. We've seen Vuč already out for 8 weeks here. He's going to be out for around 8 weeks with this hand issue. With Love out, a lot of people asking me who is the pickup, and the answer is no one, in my opinion. Jay Crowder will start, but the minutes are going to be spread amongst numerous players. Crowder played 27 in this one, had 8 and 3. I don't give a shit about that for standard leagues. Tristan Thompson gets more playing time. He had 8 and 10 in 27 minutes. He has never once been a top 150 player in his career, Thompson, and he's had opportunities to play over 30 minutes a night. So I don't care if he gets 30 minutes a night. He is not a must-own guy. Crowder has just been completely unproductive, has fallen off the face of the earth significantly. I don't care. Love's minutes are going to go to Crowder. They're going to go to Thompson. They're going to go to Jeff Green.
My name is Jeff.
They're going to go to Channing Frye, who had 20 points in 21 minutes and now enters the pantheon of perfect three-point streaming options. It's going to go a little bit to Dwayne Wade as well, especially some of that usage, maybe a little bit to Kyle Korver. So there's not going to be one clear-cut winner here for Kevin Love. As for Wade, brilliant game, 18, 8, and 5. I think he's more a 14-teamer than a 12-team guy. But interestingly, in this game, Derrick Rose, DNPCD, after Wade had said, I'll sacrifice minutes for Rose. That lasted about 2 weeks until they realized Rose is not good, and he was out of the rotation completely. Maybe not saying he's not good doesn't capture the whole thing for Rose, because he still can have flashes. He's not anywhere near as good as what he thinks he is or what his fans think he is. He is a disaster defensively. He doesn't pass the ball. He can't shoot. But I think part of it is just the shit blokiness of it, that he just wears on teams. He's already left this team and buggered off for 2 months to find himself, did it to the Knicks last year without telling anyone. And then against the Pistons 2 days ago, in the fourth quarter, needed to go take a piss and just left. And Ty Lue wasn't happy about it. Like, Ty Lue's gone, if I was playing, I would have just held it in. But Rose was, I gotta go take a piss. Kind of my bladder explode. And I think that sort of stuff just grates on his teammates. And they can shout him out as much as they want, and we know all the internal strife in Cleveland, but that has to be a factor. Rose not playing at all in this game. The Pistons can't get a full gauge on the rotation, of course, because Blake wasn't here, Willie Reed wasn't here, and of course the main ingredient, Mike Wilbon's mate, Bryce Johnson, also wasn't there. Drummond, brilliant, 21, 22 and 7, 3 steals and 3 blocks. That is just an absolute monster of a fantasy line. He will cop a little bit of a hit when Blake arrives, mainly in his assists. I don't think that Blake is taking all these rebounds off Drummond. I think if anyone's going to cop the hit in rebounds, it's going to be Drummo rather than Blake. The other big thing of note here is the performance of Stan Johnson. 40 minutes for Kyle's boyfriend, 26, 10 and 4, 2 steals, 1 block and a 3. Now, Kyle has always said that Stan Johnson is going to be a hybrid of Harden and Kawhi. And with that sort of performance, I see where you're coming from, Kyle. Obviously, Kyle is talking a little bit tongue-in-cheek there. And if Kyle is listening, he will definitely message me and tell me I am not tongue-in-cheek. That's a huge game from Stan, but what we do have to remember, he will not under any circumstance have a usage rate of 30% when Blake Griffin plays. I can 100% assure you. He also is a horrendous shooter, so he won't be a 48% guy on 21 attempts very often. But He's handling the ball more aggressive rebounding. The steals and blocks, he's been really cranking it up in that area, and his usage has increased. So he is absolutely fine to grab in a 12-team league. But when Blake comes back, I don't think 40% or 40 minutes on 30% usage is anywhere close to a realistic expectation. Reggie Bullock had 22, 2, and 2 with 4 triples in 30 minutes. Another supremely efficient game from Bullock. He's a 12-team league guy. Where I was a little disappointed with the playing time that Luke Kennard got. Fewer minutes than what he was getting before the trade. Only 22 here, 4 and 4. I think those minutes will come up as Stan doesn't play 40 a night. But he is, if you added him, I'd be okay holding. If you want to make the switch for Stan Johnson, by all means, go ahead. But I think we'll see better games from Kennard moving forward as opposed to this sort of shit show. Langston Galloway was out of the rotation until late, with Dwight Bikes playing 11 minutes as the backup, and Ish Smith had 19, 2, and 7, a strong game from Ish. The next game, the Denver Nuggets and the San Antonio Spurs. The Blue Arrow had 18 and 6, and Farton Will Barton had 13, 3, and 2 with 5 steals. Now, the news from Mason Plumlee is he's going to be out a little while with his calf thing. I don't know what that means exactly, but you'd have to think at least a week for Mason. So of course, the logical move was to start Darrell Arthur, who just hasn't played in I don't know how long. Now, Arthur played well. 10 points in 19 minutes, 3 rebounds, a steal and a block. But just a confusing lineup decision from a bloke, Dr. Malone, who is known for them. I'm not grabbing Arthur anyway. And Ken Faried out of the rotation entirely. Again, another weird one. But to me, the weirdest thing, probably the weirdest rotation decision of the whole day, was the fact that Wilson Chandler was back from his migraine. He was available to play, but we didn't play him. And Malone's reasoning, well, Torrey Craig is on a 45. He's on a two-way contract. He's nearing the end of his 45 days. I'm paraphrasing him here. We're going to send him back to the G League soon. So I thought we might as well play him while we have him. That's not how this works, Malone. This is not how any of this works. Just because you've got someone here and, oh, he's going to go back down, I better make use of it. It's not like it's not how it works. It's not how any of it works. You play the guy who is the best in your situation, and that if that's Wilson Chandler. If you don't think it's Wilson Chandler, if you think Torrey Craig is better, fine. Say it. But this reason of, oh, we've got to make sure we just get the most of him before he goes back down, it's bullshit. It's a ridiculous excuse. You could say that for anyone. Oh, we're gonna play Monty Morris because he's going to go back to the G League, but we've got to make sure we get his playing time up. We've got to make sure we get in the big playing time while he's here. It is a ludicrous excuse. Fine. Torrey Craig's better than Wilson Chandler in your mind. No one would have any issue with that being your reasoning. But your reasoning of we have to play him because we're not going to be able to play him later on, what does it matter? It is a ludicrous decision. Now, Baby Neck's not a 12-team guy, probably not a 14-team league guy, but that was weird to me. Manny Moutier played well, more just a deeper league guy. Jokic had an ankle scare but came back 13, 7, and 8. While we'll talk about Gaz Harris a little bit later on. On to the Spurs. Bryn Forbes closed the game over Dan Green. 6-5 for Greeny with 2 blocks, and Forbes, he had 2-2. You're not adding either of those guys in 12-team leagues. Green's more a 14-team league. Well, DeJounte Murray, one of the weirdest stat lines you'll see for a point guard. 26 minutes, 0 points, 13 rebounds, 7 assists, and 2 blocks. He is not your traditional point guard. He's not a modern point guard. He is just, that is a weird, weird stat line. But it helps in fantasy. We just, I'm not one of those guys that subscribes to that my center must block shots, my shooting guard must shoot threes bullshit, because I'll tailor my team around a guy if they're providing enough value. Now, you can say, I need my point guard to score and shoot threes. I'll get my threes from Anthony Tolliver. I'll get them from Troy Daniels. I'll get them somewhere else. And getting a guy who's getting me 13 rebounds, 7 assists, and 2 blocks, like, that's useful, and that can be worked into certain teams. I think he should be owned everywhere, but there's going to be some rough nights in terms of efficiency from him. Powell had 18 and 8, Aldridge had 30 and 5, and Kyle Anderson bounced back with an 18, 4 and 5, and added a pair of blocks, and he probably should be owned in all 12-team leagues as well. The next game, the Golden State Warriors and the Utah Jazz. The Jazz jerseys, man, sick. Love them. The best jerseys in the league, I think. I like the Heat ones, the Vice ones. But these Jazz ones, combined with the court, looked absolutely sensational. The Warriors were horrible. Just horrible. They got their asses kicked in a big way. Klay had 27 in 31 minutes, but Durant was poor. Curry was poor. there was nobody who was good. It was just Draymond was poor, just poor games all around. Let's chalk that up to playing against a good defense, a weird performance, and just an all-around shit show from the majority of their guys. On to the Jazz, ravishing Rick Rubio, 35 minutes, 23, 5, and 11 with a steal and two triples. That is brilliant from Rick. He is a guy that, and I don't think I said drop him anywhere. I'm pretty sure I was always like, I understand the frustration. It's dropping back. I don't see him coming back to top 30 value, but I would still hold. And I'm pretty glad that I did say that because he has been much improved lately. The assist rate has gone up. But I think more importantly is the minutes have gone back up. Now, how much of that is a factor of Rocket Rodney Hood being out for the last 5 to 6 games? I'm not sure. But I'm taking it as a positive. The assist rate's up. He's looking a bit better with Rudy Gobert out in the court. And if he is on my waiver wire, I would go and add him and see what happens from here. Jingle and Joe was on fire, 5 triples in the first half, ended with 20 points and 6 threes, an assist, 2 assists and a steal. I wouldn't classify him as a priority add in standard leagues. If I own him, of course you hold him, and he can have that value, but I think this is probably best case scenario. Favors had 18 and 10, and Gobert had 9 and 6 with 3 steals and a block. Not much else really happening on that bench for the Jazz. Last game of the night, the Blazers and the Clippers. Lillard had 28, 4, and 7, 5 triples and 3 steals, a huge game from him. While Nurkic only played the 28 minutes, but 14 and 20 with 2 steals, we will absolutely take that. It didn't stop Ed Davis from being productive. Davis had 14 and 9 with a steal and 2 blocks as those guys split the center minutes between the two of them. Davis is a guy that you can actually look at owning in standard leagues, given the way that he's playing. Especially if you are shy on rebounds, because he is getting them in huge, huge quantities, almost getting 10 a game recently. In fact, over the last 6 games, he is averaging 10 a game, 1.3 blocks and 71% shooting, which is good for top 70 in the league. So you can absolutely own him, even though it might be short term. Al-Farouq Aminu.
Sometimes it may be good, sometimes it may be shit.
Well, the shooting was shit. 11 and 10 with 2 triples on 31% shooting. A solid borderline 12-team league guy, while CJ McCollum had 16 and 5. On to the Clippers again. Not a full picture of everything because Toby Harris, Avery Bradley weren't ready to go, but we did have the return of the Rooster, Danilo Gallinari. 25 minutes, 15 and 5, started. If he's on your wire, and he is, add him. Add him absolutely everywhere. He should be owned. But for all the people who were really big on the Montrezl Harrell ownership thing, he only played 17 minutes in a game where Gallinari was restricted to 25 minutes and Tobias Harris did not play. Now, granted, Harrell was good. 15 and 7 with 3 assists, a steal and a block, super productive. But the fact that he didn't start at power forward and he didn't play big minutes when their starting power forward wasn't even around should be telling you that he's only going to have value if DeAndre Jordan is traded, which again is an if. And the second if you have to put together with that is, will another center comes back who is superior to Harrell? And you can throw the same stuff on with Boban Marjanovic there also. Milos had 9, 5, and 3. Wasn't a great night from Teodosic. I think he can be improved with Blake gone, though. While Lou Williams had 20 points on just awful shooting, 5 of 26. Who else do I need to talk? Oh, Ty Wallace. I really like what Ty Wallace is doing. 15 points with 3 assists and a steal. He is going to find it hard to maintain minutes when everyone is back. Same as Wes Johnson, who brings the defense every game. 5 points, 8 boards, but a steal and 4 blocks. Just gets those defensive numbers every game. But again, once Gallinari is back in business, Avery Bradley arrives, Tobias Harris plays, and then Austin Rivers comes back. Where is Johnson getting enough minutes to be relevant? For now, he is, but that and him along with Ty Wallace, that is going to drop off within the next week or so. All right, that wraps up all of the action from Tuesday. I am going to take a quick break. We're going to come back and then we're going to shine that player spotlight on Gaz Harris of the Denver Nuggets and then preview an 8-game Wednesday for DFS in the NBA. We've got a song from Jake McKelvey and the Countertops, and then we'll be back. This song is called Flock Hard, Lock Heart.
Not miss me like he said a thousand times. There best not be a pigeon over there. Born again, my left foot, I've seen saner men than you. Camp and eventually crumble. Camp and eventually crumble. does not mean a thing. You best not come crawling back to plea. And don't my darling shiver when your fur collection flees.
All right, guys, we're back. Let's take a look at the player spotlight for today, and it is Gary Harris. A guy who is really coming into his own this season. It started to do that last year, or even the season before, but this is his fourth year, and he has elevated himself to be one of the upper echelon shooting guards that many people wouldn't realize is actually as good as he is. He's playing 35 minutes a night this year, averaging 17.5 points, 2.5 threes, 2.7 rebounds, over 3 assists and 2 steals, and does it extremely efficiently, 49% from the field, 83 from the line, and 39 from three. He is at 60% true shooting. A league average is around 55, 56. He was at 61 last year and 57 the year before. That is three super strong years. And for us in fantasy, he's the 31st ranked player this year, 25th over the last month. Now, he did start a little bit lower when Millsap was around to start the year. So you have to have a little bit of a level of concern of what happens to him when Paulie returns. But it's not like he's using an extraordinarily large amount of possessions. Only 20% usage over the season, 22% over the last month. These are not crazy numbers. And last year he was ranked 65th and had a usage of only 18%. So Denver understands how good he is. Now, not all coaches do the right thing, hashtag Tom Thibodeau, in terms of distributing shots where they should go most of the time. But Gaz has really established himself as a guy who's introduced some ball handling skills, can provide some good defense, especially with his steals. Yeah, just rock solid with his shooting. It feels like he's never going to miss when he is out there. And everybody who is a Denver person will be super impressed with what he's... I reckon he wasn't far off even being... If he was in the Eastern Conference, he would have been not far off being an all-star consideration. That's how good I think Gaz Harris is and how good I think he can become. He is sporting a impressive PR of 17.1. You know, strong positive box score plus minus, big win share numbers. On off is just out of control, a plus 10.9. That is how good he has been this year, which is an extraordinarily large number. He was at just 1.5 last season. He is really, really taking it to new levels this season, which is, you know, obviously huge for this Denver team. It increases usage every season in the NBA, and you know, the efficiency is not dipping in that area. He's creating more of his own shots this season. He has assisted on only 67% of his shots. He was at 76% last year, so more self-creation, more driving, more attacking, more threes in transition, that sort of thing, really improving there. Now, he only takes 9% of his shots from the corner, which is something that he probably should be doing more of. That can be an improvement to his game, but he's not working only as a spot-up guy now. He is working more as a creator and more of a primary 1A, 1B sort of offense option on offense, except when Will Barton thinks that he runs the world and tries to be the hero in games when he really should be giving it to the bloke who can actually shoot the ball and create his own shot, and that is Gaz Harris. How much better can he get from there? That's the big question. Where does he improve? Well, he's only age 23, so he's got 2 to 3 more years left of improvement, and as I said, he's the 31st ranked player this year. Where does he get better? I think the most likely area is that he can up his usage. He can go from a 20% guy to a 24% guy, and then become a 20-point scorer. He can also increase from a 3 assist per game guy to a 4.5 assist per game guy. And those two things happening, assuming he maintains his stellar level of steal rate and stellar efficiency, which I think that he could do, he gets those two things happening, then we're talking about a top 20 player. I think the top 10 is significantly out of reach. I don't think he will ever get there. But if he can become a 20-point guy, 3 rebounds, 4.5 assists, 2 steals on 49 and 83, that's top 20 sort of numbers, at the very least top 25 sort of numbers. And I think, especially when Paul Millsap is gone after next season, or even as he declines and we see what they do, if they really go, well, Gaz is our offensive guy now along with Jokic, and those two work together so brilliantly, it's fantastic to watch them. We're looking at, I reckon, by the 2019-20 season that Gaz Harris has a top 20 fantasy year there, as he's improved his assist and he becomes a 20-point scorer for that season. That's my prediction for him. I don't think that he will necessarily be able to maintain that level for 10 years plus, but I do think that he can become a top 20 guy at least for one or two seasons and have maybe three or four top 50 years in there until he starts to dip a little bit, maybe with that efficiency or the steal rate might drop, which is something that could happen in the next 3 to 4 years. I would think that as the scoring goes up a little bit, maybe those steals come back down and that might prevent him from being a top 20 guy. But I love his value. He is underrated in fantasy. He's not as good in points leagues. I'm aware of that because so much of his value comes from those elite efficiency numbers. Getting a shooting guard to be a positive in field goal percentage on large attempts is huge. Gets the steals, which is his best category, but adds in points, threes, positive in assists, positive in field goals and free throws. You're talking about a guy who's a positive contributor in 6 of the 8 categories, which is clearly huge. And if you're in a 9-cat league and you care about that, he's a positive in turnovers as well. So that really elevates him. I probably should look what he is in terms of 9-cat rank. He might even be close to it. He might be a top 25 guy already this year. And I'm talking at my ass for you people who look at 9-cat numbers exclusively. Now, he's the 29th ranked guy in 9-cat and 16th over the last month, which is, I think he can get to 16th. Oh yeah, maybe 18th as a peak in his 8-cat value, but a massive, massive fan of Gaz Harris, as you're well aware. Let's look at the perfect DFS lineups now. We will start with FanDuel. Ravishing Rick Rubio, 45.5, and Dame Lillard, 53.3. Dwayne Wade had 36.1, and Jimmy Harden, just the 98.5. Stan Johnson had 49. Wes Johnson had 34.8. Tone Tolliver, 39.8. Zebo had 42.4. And Andre Drummond, 72.9, for a total, a big total of 471.6. And that cost $49,300. On DraftKings, Ravishing Rick had 48.75. Stan Johnson, 58.5. Tone Tolliver, 38.5. Favors had 39. Drummond had 71. Jimmy Harden had just 103.5 here. Enes Kanter, 56. And Kostas Koufos, 46.75. And that was a total of 454 for a salary amount of the big max $50,000 dues. All right, let us move on to talking about the games from Wednesday and try and get us some of those dollary dues into our accounts. The first game we're going to take a look at is the Indiana Pacers and the Memphis Grizzlies. The Pacers are favored by 7, and the total is 203.5 points. And of course, there is a ton of injuries to talk about here. Dylan Brooks is questionable. Deontay Davis is questionable. Jermichael Green is doubtful. Mario Chalmers is questionable. Ben McLemore is questionable. Jim Ennis is out. Chandler Parsons is out. So a bunch of guys. I think it's probably someone else that's out that I'm forgetting as well. Mike Conley, of course, is out. And Jermichael Green is doubtful, yeah. So lots of things that can change here, especially on the wing there. If Dylan Brooks is out, if Chalmers is out, if McLemore's out, you're going to have opportunities for Mike Henry. You're going to have opportunities for Kobe Simmons, for Wayne Seldon. Lots of punty GPP type guys. For the Pacers, you've got Lance Stephenson, who is questionable. If he is out, it's more minutes for Joe Young, more for Corey Joseph, and more for Dazza Collison. The good thing is it's the first game of the night, so you're going to hear this Memphis stuff before stuff locks, and you can really start to focus in on some guys who might have some value. I'm going to assume that Green is out and all of those questionable guys are playing when I'm talking here. But of course, you can check out how everything looks on Basketball Monster with our what-if scenarios to check how the value changes if certain guys are out. The point guards, Andy Harrison's at 4,200. He could have some value if many guys are out, but otherwise not someone I'm overly interested in. Corey Joseph at 43 doesn't do it for me, while Mario Chalmers at 36 with Tyreek around, really, I think, a limited value sort of a guy. While Daz Collison at 5,500, I like Dazza. If Lance is out, then I am more in on Collison at 5,500 here. Shooting guards, Vic Oladipo, 9,300, probably just a little bit too expensive. The matchup is really good, and the Grizzlies are normally a shit matchup, but they have allowed a lot of points to shooting guards recently. 9,300 for Vic is more tournament than cash, though, in my opinion. Wayne Seldon, at minimum, would absolutely be a GPP guy. There's an opportunity, while Tyreek at 8,200, probably just a little bit too high for Tyreek, but I don't hate it, and I think it can be used. Mike Henry is the other one, 3,800, who could be worth a sniff, but I'd rather take Saldo at minimum. The small forwards, Bojan Bogdanovic is at 4,200. He gets a boost if Stevenson is out as well, so there might be something to see there. Dylan Brooks at 43 and Lance at 52. That ain't really moved the needle. At power forward, Ivan Rabb at 3,500 minimum salary. 20 points in 20 minutes in the last game, averaging 18 in 19 across his last three outings. Jermichael Green unlikely to play. Rabb could have some minutes here. He's worth the GPP look, definitely. Wouldn't be comfortable in cash, though. While Jarrell Martin's at 5,200. Assuming that Green is out, I think that Martin is a fine guy to use in cash. The Deuce Young's at 65. That's a little bit too expensive, in my opinion. While Sabonis at 65, he is moving back to the bench, so that is fade territory. At centre, Miles Turner starting 5,500 in. You should be in on that. That is a great price for Miles Turner. I'm all about using him at that salary. Well, Marc Gasol at 7,900, a great matchup for Gasol. I am in on using him, but more leaning towards tournaments. Let's flick that over to how things look on the DraftKings side of things. No one that I really love on the DraftKings side here. Rab at minimum 35 is worth a flyer. Corey Joseph at 38 could be a GPP guy. Miles Turner at 61, it takes a bit of the value out. And it is a negative matchup for Miles, so given that price rise, he's a harder one to use. Gasol and Evans and Oladipo are all a little bit too highly priced for me to consider great options, whereas I like Jarrell Martin at 49. I think that's a cash-worthy play. Let's go to the next one. It's the Los Angeles Lakers. They are traveling to the Orlando Magic, and they'll be playing without Lonzo Ball. As Gordon is questionable with his left hip flexor, if he is out again, then Mario Hezonja will get another start and hopefully not pick up 2 fouls in the first couple of minutes and enable him to push towards 30 minutes. At point guard, Tyler Ennis will start and we won't care. Lord Alfred at $7,000 obviously struggled in today's game, but this is a decent matchup and I'd be interested in putting him into a tournament. When there's a good matchup, he normally plays quite well. Mack and Augustine both played well today, but that's a little bit fluky. At shooting guard, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope is at 5,200. I never feel confident about using him, but this matchup is so good that I would put him into my tournament pool, but that's really about it. Hezonja at 41, of course, we're all about that. If Gordo is out, Jordy Clarkson at 7,200, worth a GPP, but that's pretty bloody high. Point guards do go off against the Magic. Will they play him the 33 or will they play him 23? That's the big question, and that's why it makes him a tournament-only sort of a guy. At small forward, Johnny Simmons is at 47, nothing to do with that. Brandon Ingram at 6,000. Ingram's averaging 35 over the last three. Give me 35 points, I'll give you $6,000, and let's consider that a transaction well made. And that's how I think that you should be viewing Ingram here, in a really good spot to exceed that value. Power forward, as Gordon, 8,300. The uncertainty makes me want to leave that alone. While the future MVP, Kyle Kuzma's at 5,300. I don't feel confident with him in cash, but I do think that he is an interesting tournament guy. Ken Birch, Larry Nance Jr. Well, Nance is just too high at 5,800 in my opinion. And then you've got Julius Randle, if I can find him. Actually, he's listed as a center now. 6,800 for Randle. Probably a little bit too high for him also. He's been putting up some solid numbers. Yeah, 28 minimum over the last five, which is all right. It's actually pretty bloody good, to be honest. But I don't feel super strongly about him. Brookie Lopez, no. And Biyombo at 55, that's probably going to be a fade situation for myself. On DraftKings, I like Peyton again for tournaments at 68. Ingram at 63, even though it's more expensive, I'm still in on that for cash. While Nance at 51, that is really in your cash territory, a much cheaper price on DraftKings versus FanDuel. Everything else is very much falls into the same situation as how they're all priced on FanDuel, and my same thoughts apply there as they do here. The next game, it is the Hornets. It's the Hawks. We have got the Hornets favored by 2.5 and the total is 211.5. Marvin Williams has been ruled out already for Charlotte, so that's good that we've got that news in advance. So that means we're going to get a lot more Frank the Tank Kaminsky. At point guard, Dennis Schroeder, 7,300, had a nice 39-pointer in that last game. The matchup's about neutral against Charlotte. You'd expect it to be better than that, so there is some GPP upside, so that's the way I'd lean with him. While Kemba Walker at 8,500, point guards have done very well against Atlanta. That price is a little bit too high. I don't dislike it for cash. I actually think that there is a decent floor there for Kemba, given how well he's playing. I'm just not sure how high the upside is. Malcolm Delaney at 3,600. He played over Torian Prince in the second half of the last game and put up 25 points. I think the upside is pretty limited for Delaney and the floor is not all that high. Nick Batum at 55, I really like. That's strong to me, while Bazemore at 55 bounced back with a strong performance in his last game. And I think both of those guys at those prices are really, really good options. Small forwards, Mick Kidd-Gilchrist, 4,900. I think that price is just a bit high. The matchup's not bad for Mickey, but I'd probably leave him alone, while the artist formerly known as Torian Prince is just tumbling. If you're going to use him, it's only in a tournament, but it's probably Fade City for me here. At power forward, Frank the Tank's at 41. I think you have to consider him a guy to use in pretty much all circumstances. Really like his ability to go for 25 or 30 here, assuming he gets the minutes over Trevion Graham or John O'Brien, which I do assume he does. The Baptist, John Collins at 5,000. Yeah, huge upside, we know that. Good matchup, but will it come to fruition? Well, that's why you'd throw him into a tournament and you wouldn't want to look at him in cash at all. At centre, Dwight Howard, 10,100. This guy is killing it. I am all about Dwight here. Beautiful matchup. 50 point, realistic target is 50 points here for Dwighty. All over it. The Undertaker, Mike Muscala, Miles Plumlee. I don't think there's any real DFS value in any of those guys. Over on, which side are we looking at? DraftKings, sorry. Tournaments, the Baptist at 48 and Kidd-Gilchrist at 41. Much better price for Kidd-Gilchrist. Really can get behind that. And for cash, Frank the Tank at 44 is great. Dwight at 94 is excellent. Love Dwight Howard at that price. Schroeder and Walker, similar to how they are on FanDuel, while Bazemore and Batum have much less value on DraftKings than they do with their counterparts over on FanDuel. Not their counterparts because they're the same person. The 76ers and the Brooklyn Nets. The Sixers are favored by 6.5 and the total is 211. We don't know. We know that Jared Bayless is out. We assume D'Angelo... Sorry, we don't know. Jared Bayless is questionable. Markel Fultz is questionable. We don't know if... I would assume Fultz is not going to play. For the Nets, we don't know if Rondae Hollis-Jefferson is going to play. We've got Caris LeVert as questionable. And D'Angelo Russell, it's a back-to-back, so I'm assuming that D'Angelo is going to sit this one out as well. So there's a few unknown scenarios in this game. Spencer Dinwiddie at 55. The numbers have been dropping, but that salary is low. Russell likely out. I'm all about using Spencer here. While Timothy John McConnell at 4,300. Point guards against the Nets, man. It's one of those tenets of fantasy. He has got a good record against Brooklyn, so I am all about using TJ in this one. Bayless and Whitehead, nothing to see with those guys. That shooting guard, LeVert at 4,800. Pretty hard to get behind that, while Sauce Castillo at 3,700. I actually like Stauskas here. I think there's 20-point upside, 25-point upside, in fact, especially if LeVert happens to sit and he gets more minutes. These small forwards, Damari Carroll's at 55. Limited upside, decent enough floor given the absence of Rondae, so I think that's good. Jumpin' Joe Harris is at 39. He's a tournament guy, while the Blue Swimmer's at 45. I'll take Jumpin' Joe over the Blue Swimmer any day. Bob Cubs at 6,000. Has loved lighting up the Nets in the past, so that should put him into your tournament pool, but of course, we know the streakiness that is Bob Cove, so we can leave him out of cash. While Benny Simmons at 8,600. Been putting up some strong, strong games. I don't really 100% feel this here for him, but if you're going to go point guards against someone, you go point guards against the Nets, and that's exactly what Simmons is, even though he's listed as a power forward. At 8,600, I think you can consider that an option. Dario Saric at 65, point guards against the Nets, big men against the Nets. Saric at 65 is probably just a little bit too high, though. I think I'd leave that alone. Quincy Acey, Amir Johnson, and Trevor Booker, not much for me to care about. Jahlil Okafor revenge game. 3,800 for Okafor, and I actually think that Okafor's in a good spot here, not because it's a revenge game, but because Rondae is out, because they've changed up that front court rotation. We've seen two games in a row for Jahlil of over 20 minutes, and if he gets over 20 minutes here, he can get 20 fantasy points. I feel a decent degree of confidence in that, so I'm okay with using Okafor here, and that's probably the last time I'll ever say that. I also like giving Joel Embiid a run, because he is going to rip massive, massive holes in the asshole region of Jahlil Okafor in the Nets. 9,700 for Joel. Great matchup. This has got 70 points written all over it. Not saying he gets there, but that's the sort of vibe you get from this. Well, Allen as a starter at 37, yeah, sure. Throw it into a tournament. Where if they give him 26 minutes, he can come down with five blocks, and that can repay that value just based on that. The Embiid matchup is obviously terrible for him, though, so that is a concern. Not that it's not terrible for Okafor or for James Webb or for Tyler Zeller or for whatever other bullshit they throw out there. No other centers for me to really talk about in this one, so let's move it on to DraftKings. Dinwiddie's at 62 there, so not as good as FanDuel, but still something that I like. I like TJ McConnell at 44. Simmons at 88 is still good. Embiid at 10-4 is probably pushing it in the wrong direction. Okafor at 36, I can definitely get behind. Stauskas as a GPP flyer works there also. While Jarrett Allen is at 3,800 again. Very similar to how it all looks on FanDuel. Let's go to the next one. It's the Heat. It's the Cavs. The Cavs are favored by 3, and the total is 213 points here. Cavs on a back-to-back after getting beaten by the Pistons, who had nobody on their team. Pretty embarrassing loss for Cleveland. Let's see what they can do here against Miami. At point guard, the Iron Shoulder, Goran Dragic, 6,800 point guards against the Cavs, man. Dragic isn't in play here for sure based on that alone. Isaiah Thomas at 6,200, just not getting anywhere, not even sniffing close to that value. So a little bit hard, especially against a significantly negative matchup that is the Miami Heat. So I think you can leave him alone at that salary. Tyler Johnson at 51 hasn't played that well in the last two games back. I am a little bit worried about his minutes given the fact that Justice Winslow is now handling a lot of backup point guard minutes. It is a good spot to use him in a tournament though, just because of the opposition. The Duke, Wayne Ellington, 4,500, absolutely a tournament guy against the Cavs. The Plumber, J.R. Smith, is only a tournament guy, and that's it. Well, Dwayne O'Wade on a back-to-back against his former team. Can you get interested there? I think the Kevin Love injury does more for him than many people expect, so I do think that Wade at 4,300 is an option that you can use. LeBron, 11,400.
LeBron James.
Yeah. Yep, let's go. 60 points for LeBron here. I really, really like this one. Joshie Richardson at 65 is probably just a little bit too high, even though the matchup suits him. If you want to do it, probably restrict him to your GPPs, but I don't feel good about it, nor do I feel good about Justice Winslow. At power forward, you've got a mixture of guys here who you can take a flyer on from Cleveland. Jay Crowder at 37 or Jeff Green at 36. Actually, give me Jeff Green, despite the fact that he played limited minutes in this one. I think he could wrestle those off Crowder in this game, but neither of them are going to come close to being cash options. They're going to be just GPP, wishful thinking sort of guys. Kelly Olynyk at 46, not really doing much to excite me. Well, Jimmy Johnson at 53. I think James Johnson at 53 is a worthy GPP guy who will have very low ownership. Tristan Thompson's at 4,000. It's not high. I don't think he's got a high ceiling, but I can understand using him in cash here. You know, get your 24 points and be pretty happy with it. I think he can do that, but not much more. Hassan Whiteside at 79. With Love out, I think that this gives Whiteside more ability to stay on the court, and I think that he is absolutely worth a GPP guy. And you could even go for Torrance, but there is that risk that he plays 23 minutes, so that's why I'd lean off him in cash. If I knew he was getting 29 minutes, I'd be interested in him in cash here for a 40-pointer. But I just don't know that that's going to happen. While Channing Frye at 36, of course he's in your tournament plans, given the lack of big man shooting that they are going to have now that Love is sidelined. On DraftKings, I like LeBron at 11-1. Of course I do. Isaiah Thomas at 56 is in my good books on DraftKings. 3-point bonus for him there. Lower salary, it works more in his favor, but it's still not the greatest matchup on the board. And of course, we're still looking at Tristan Thompson as a $4,000 option. Jim Johnson at 55 is a GPP, and the Iron Shoulder at 69, who's got that perfect matchup against the Cavs backcourt. The next game we'll take a look at, we're going to go to the Knicks and the Celtics. The Celtics are favored by 9. The total is 208. Shane Larkin missed last game with a sore right knee. If he is out, let's get our Terry Rozier's going, because he's going to play 30 minutes plus and be pretty much a useful player. I still like him even with Larkin playing. 4,700 for Tez. I think he can get you 25, and that's all you ask for there. Plus, he's got a 35-point upside, so I like Terry. Kyrie's at 9,000. Great matchup for Kyrie against the Knicks. That price is probably pushing it, but he has been really good. 41-point minimum over his last 5, which is strong. I could understand he's getting cash. He probably wouldn't be the first guy that I'd lock in there, but there is some value in using him. The Knicks point guards, Jarrett Jack, Frank Ntilikina, Trey Burke, I can't really get behind using any of them with a negative matchup on tap here against the Celtics. Timmy Hardaway's at 64. I think the minutes will be, you might be a little bit lower given it is a back-to-back, so that's a fade. Courtney Lee's at 54. I would look to Lee as a solid cash guy if Hardaway sits, which is a possibility. At small forward, Jaylen Brown's at 5,500. Only tournaments at this stage for Brownie. While Mick Beasley at 64, I would fire him up if our Tim Hardaway is out, but we don't know that yet at this point. Lancey Thomas and Semi Ojeleye, Dougie McDirt, nah. Power forward, Porzingis.
Porzingis.
Just one of the worst matchups possible for him. In his last three games against the Celtics, he averages 13.5 points. That's clearly anomalous, but I don't expect him to come out here and drop me a 50-pointer, which is sort of, or a 45-pointer, which is what I'd want at that salary. So he is the strongest of fades. Vanilla Tice at 3,600. I think there's a chance he gets some more minutes in this one, given the Kanter Porzingis front court. And he had 27 in the last game and is averaging 19 over the last 5 and 17 minutes. So it could be a sneaky, cheap cash guy to get some other high-priced players in there. Jason Tatum at 54 also, I think, is in a pretty good spot here as a power forward. And Marcus Morris at 47, I think this is more a fade territory for him. Al Horford at 71, I like that for Horf. 68 for Enes Kanter, a little bit worried just given the matchup there. But the last three games against the Celtics, he's played 25 minutes. He's averaged 33.5 points. Really can't argue too much with that. He's coming off a big game here. So you could look at Kanter. I wouldn't feel comfortable about doing it, though. So that leaves him as a tournament guy. And then a tournament at 6,800, his upside is pretty limited, I think, at that price. I like him as a guy, obviously. On DraftKings, nothing much really stands out to me. We're fading Porzingis again. Yeah, Kanter at 62 has way more value. Hate Horford at 76. Kyrie at 9,000. Less interested. Brown and Tatum are fine without standing out. And Courtney Lee at 52 gains a lot of value if Tim Hardaway is out. Got two games to go. Going to get you out a little bit earlier than we did yesterday. The Chicago Bulls and the Portland Trail Blazers. The Blazers are favored by 7.5 and the total is 214. Lauri Markkanen is not traveling with the Bulls. Chrissy Dunn is not traveling and Nikola Mirotic is dealing with a lower left leg strain. He is questionable. So it could actually be Punchbob Shipbloke time and he would be an excellent DFS option. He'd still be a solid one even if Mirotic plays with Markkanen out, but there could be some real value there for Punchbob. At point guard, Shabazz Napier's at 38. I think that's ship sailed. Dame Lillard at 9,100. Point guards against the Bulls. It's almost the Nets. It's almost the Magic. It's pretty bloody good. So I am all about Dame here. Like that. Or Jaren Grant at 63. The Blazers have been terrible to go against four point guards. So I don't think much changes here for Jaren. Zachy Levine's at 54. He's played terribly, shot bad, but still averaged 25 over the last three. And at 5,400, I have really high level confidence in Levine to smash through that value here. I really do like it. Justin Holiday at 56 is a fade. Whilst McCollum at 75, love the matchup for CJ. So I am looking at using him in lineups. Small forward, Evan Turner, 3,700. Look, the numbers for him have been all right when he's played. 21 over the last three. Yeah, they're okay numbers, but absolutely no chance of a high upside, and realistically, his floor's not great either. Denzel the Hammer Valentine at 4,600 has played very well lately. Average of 26 over his last five, 28 over his last three, getting minutes and production in areas that I didn't think that he would necessarily be able to do with Levine back. With Dunn out, it does help him a bit because it pushes Levine a little bit more to point guard, and it doesn't run any of those Grant and Dunn twin backcourt sets, so it gives some more minutes to the Hammer, so you can use him here while Dunn remains sidelined. At power forward, Punchbob's at 45 and Mirotic is at 62. If Mirotic is out, you are smashing that Punchbob. You are hitting the shit out of that. That is 45-point upside there for Portis. Mirotic at 62 without Markkanen, he should start. He should play over 30 if he is clear to play, which is a question at the moment. If we don't hear before lock, he's a tournament-only guy, and then he could be a low-percentage, high-value tournament guy. Portis is going to be so highly owned, though, if we hear about Mirotic out. He is going to be astronomically owned in cash lineups, and it might be actually worth your while fading him in a tournament. The Chief, Al-Farouq Aminu.
Sometimes maybe good, sometimes maybe shit.
He's at 5,200. He's got an opportunity to be good here. I actually don't mind this for cash for Aminu. And at center, Nurkic at 6,000. I'm in on using Nurk here. Well, Robin Lopez at 43. If Mirotic is out, I think that Lopez at 43 is a sensational play because he'll have to play a ton of minutes. He plays well against Portland anyway. And he's already in a good spot here with Markkanen now. And it's going to get better if Mirotic doesn't play in this one. I didn't mention it earlier, but it was interesting to me that Zach Collins for the Blazers played exclusively at power forward today. If he can work into that power forward position, that really opens up a ton for the Blazers and for his fantasy value as we move forward. On DraftKings, I like Lillard a lot at 89, McCollum at 71, Justin Holiday at 5,000 is in a much better salary spot on DraftKings. I like that. The Chief at 51 is strong, while Mirotic at 55, I absolutely love that. And PunchBob at 59, they have bumped his salary absolutely through the roof, Portis. So that takes away a ton of the appeal. I could still use it in cash if Mirotic is out, but that is it's a little bit too high, I think, for tournament value if we hear that Mirotic isn't playing or traded. The Mavs and the Suns is going to round out our viewing on Wednesday. We don't know if Devin Booker's playing. We don't know if Alex Len's playing. We assume Tyson Chandler's back after sitting out the last game. Marquise Chris is questionable and JJ Barea is questionable. So obviously, lots of questions. At point guard, Barea's at 4,400. I want nothing to do with it. Dennis Smith at 64. Brilliant matchup for Smitty. So I think this is a great spot to use him, one of the best opportunities you're going to have. If Booker is out, Isaiah Cannon and Tyler Ulis become tournament options, but relying upon them is an exercise in frustration. At shooting guard, Wes Matthews, really consistent putting up numbers lately. Great matchup for Wes. Fine for him in cash. Really like it. I think there is some tournament upside there for Wesy. While Book at 8,000, if he plays, I'm in on him. I assume that Book is going to play, and I think that this is a good spot to use Devin Booker, even though Wes Matthews' defense has been a problem. Troy Daniels at 3,600 is a GPP guy, especially if Booker is out. Joshie Jackson at 46. If Booker is out, love that even more and might even consider it cash for now. It's just a tournament. While the pencil at 66 just isn't getting it done. Although the matchup's really good for Barnsley. So if you're going to ever use him, this is probably the time. TJ Warren at 66. Strong game from him in the last one. 36 points. I don't feel really good about him though at all. Power forward, Dwight Powell, Dirk Nowitzki, Marquise Chris, Dragan Bender, Maxi Kleber, no to everyone. Tyson Chandler at 44, I'll probably leave that alone. Although I could consider Chandler as a cash center, get 25 and get out. Alex Len at 36 is a GPP upside guy. I just think that there's going to be those weird games where he plays 28 and Chandler plays 20, and that gives him that GPP upside. Well, I don't think that Greg Monroe...
As Greg runs in, we realise this could get dangerous.
I don't think that he's even going to see the court in this one, so that's going to be hard for him to maintain value. On DraftKings, I don't love much here. Booker's too expensive. Dennis Smith's probably too expensive. TJ Warren's right about where he needs to be. Matthews is a little bit priced up. It's nothing. Everything seems a little bit too highly priced on DraftKings for this Phoenix and Dallas game. All right, before we go and get you out of here, let's go through the other sites now. On Yahoo, I'm looking at tournament picks of Mirotic, as I discussed earlier, Michael Kidd-Gilchrist, Andy Harrison, Isaiah Cannon, Jumpin' Joe Harris, Dwight Powell, Justice Winslow, Nick Stauskas, and Wayne Selden. Cash and tournament guys, Joshie Jackson, Tyson Chandler, Rozier, Kaminsky, Wes Matthews, Jarrell Martin, PunchBob Shiploke, CJ McCollum, Victor Oladipo, Dwight Howard, and Joel Embiid. On Moneyball for tournaments, McCollum, Payton, Mirotic, Jason Tatum, Tristan Thompson, Joshie Jackson, Jahlil Okafor, and for cash, I'm looking at Frank the Tank, Bob Portis, Kent Bazemore, Zach LaVine, Miles Turner, Nick Batum, Brandon Ingram, Dennis Smith, Spencer Dinwiddie, Lillard, Howard, Embiid, and LeBron. And on Draft Stars, LeBron is a tournament guy, Mirotic, Dinwiddie, Dennis Smith Jr., Jaron Grant, Tristan Thompson, TJ McConnell, Ivan Rabb, Jarrett Allen. For cash, I'm looking at Stauskas, Jeff Green, Jay Crowder, Okafor, Jarrell Martin, Frank Kaminsky, Isaiah Thomas, Goran Dragic, CJ McCollum, Dwight Howard, and Joel Embiid. If you do listen to this podcast on Apple Podcasts, go and leave a 5-star review. It's one of the best ways of helping the show. Another way would be going to Draft and using that promo code LOFANTASY. Enter yourself into a free contest today with that promo code along with that money-back guarantee. Make sure you are checking out the rest of the Locked On Podcast Network. Check out Locked On Clippers. Check out Locked On Pistons for Lucas and Matt's reactions to the trade. Check out Locked On Wizards with Ben for the John Wall injury news. And Locked On Cavs with Chris as he discusses everything about the Kevin Love situation in Cleveland. You can find me on Twitter, Josh Lloyd, at @RedRock_Beeble, and of course on Basketball Monster. We are done here, guys. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya. Stan Van Gundy.